Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. One of the most important developments in the election this year is the active participation of young people. It is the youth who are helping to propel the campaign of Senator Bernie Sanders, and it is the progressive youth that give us the hope of the future of America. Here with us today is one of the young people who has been very politically active. Myla Rostain is a student at Yale University, where she is the executive director of SNAPPAC, the largest student PAC in the United States. Myla Rostain, welcome to All Together Now.
Thank you, Eleanor. Thank you for having me on the show.
I'm excited. I want to learn all about what's happening on the campuses these days. So first, tell us about SNAPPAC. What does SNAP stand for, and what's the purpose of SNAPPAC?
So SNAPPAC is the nation's largest student-run political action committee, and SNAP stands for Students for New American Politics. We sponsor fellowships over the summer for college-age youth from across the country who wouldn't otherwise be able to take their summer and go and work on political campaigns, and we place them in House and Senate races across the country. So while we elect progressive leaders, we're also working on diversifying campaign staff and making sure that that's an opportunity that more people have.
And these are United States House and Senate races, right? These are national level.
Exactly.
Fantastic. And you do endorsements of candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And how long has SNAPPAC been around?
We were founded in 2006 by a few Yale students, so we're finishing up our 10th year right now, and we've placed over 100 fellows over the years and raised over $200,000.
Wow, that's fantastic. So tell us, you know, some of the candidates that you've endorsed. This is a progressive PAC, right?
Yes.
Good. So tell us some of the candidates that SNAPPAC has endorsed.
So this cycle, we've made two endorsements thus far, and we'll be making another 18 or so over the next few weeks. We've endorsed Susanna Randolph and Carol Shea Porter. So we send out a questionnaire to a number of progressive candidates across the country, and this is a questionnaire that our staff at Yale has collaborated on, and we decide represents our sort of political progressive mindset. This year, we had a particular focus on economic justice, and so we send that out to a number of campaigns, and we look at candidates' records and what they've been up to in the past, whether in office or with what they might have otherwise been involved in, and we make endorsements along that line. So in past years, we've endorsed Chris Murphy a number of times. We've endorsed Elizabeth Warren, and then we also like to focus on House races where we feel that we have a little bit more of an impact.
Yes, absolutely. And how does this all work? You're not doing this alone, right? There's a whole team of students that are working with you.
Yes, so we have about a staff of about 15 students here at Yale.
Staff of 15. Is anybody paid?
No one is paid. We are all donating the labor.
That's amazing. And I know how demanding student life is there at Yale, so it's impressive that you all are taking this amount of time to devote to getting progressive candidates elected. And how do you figure out what your criteria are for endorsement? You mentioned this year you're focusing on economic justice. Is that kind of a discussion among the 15 people on staff, or how do you figure it out?
Yes, so we, at the beginning of the year, sat down and we discussed a number of issues. So our questionnaire touches on a whole host of domestic and foreign policy issues. And there are certain issues that we decide we absolutely must have the candidate answer yes for. And then there are other issues where we feel like, you know, a progressive candidate in Connecticut may look different than what a progressive candidate in, say, Texas looks like. And so we definitely take into consideration geographically and politically where the candidates are when we're making our decisions about what we consider progressive.
That sounds great. And so you've now placed, in the 10 years, you've placed 100 fellows, and then you kind of embed them in House and Senate races to help out. Is that right?
Yes. So they work for 10 to 12 weeks over the summer, and then what I think we're most proud of is the numbers of our fellows who then go on either to be hired by campaigns or work in labor organizing or in congressional offices. That's something that we really take a lot of pride in, just to see the campaigns experience that they have really influencing what they do with their life.
That's fantastic. And have you done one of these fellowships yet, or you're busy running it because you're the executive director?
So I have not done one of the fellowships. I have volunteered on a number of local and federal campaigns ever since I can pretty much remember. We try and, as much as possible, make the opportunity of the fellowship available to people who really otherwise wouldn't be able to do that over the summer. And luckily enough, going to Yale, I think that there are a fair number of opportunities that we have to get involved in political campaigns.
That's great. And you've raised the money. Is that to pay? Do the fellows receive some kind of stipend for working on the campaign for 10 to 12 weeks?
Yes. So we make in-kind contributions to the campaign in the form of we place two fellows on each campaign that we endorse, and they get a stipend for the summer.
Fantastic. And how much did you say you've raised?
Over $200,000.
$200,000. That's impressive. How did you do that?
We've done it a number of ways. We host a number of fundraisers. We also work on press releases. We have several big donors that we are lucky enough to have had supporting us for almost 10 years now, but we're always looking to expand that as well.
That's great. And you recently did an event hosted by The Nation in New York City that was a fundraiser, right?
Yes, and we were lucky enough to have Katrina Vandenhuevel there to speak for us, which has been great. And The Nation has supported us ever since we were founded in 2006.
That's very impressive. I'm very encouraged to see that connection there. And how did the fundraiser go? Did you raise any money?
It was great, yes. We raised a big amount of money, which we were pretty happy with.
Fantastic. And we want to make sure to get you on that annual Nation cruise.
Yes.
So that the people who cruise every year with The Nation, I've been on that before, and it's a great experience. I think you should be there, or someone representing the Student for New American Politics PAC should be there and make that connection, because I think the average age is probably about 65. So good to get some fresh young blood there and expand your base of people who know what you're doing, because I think this is really encouraging what you're doing.
Definitely.
And when you say the Students for New American Politics, what does New American Politics mean to you?
I think that's where we envision our progressive ideals coming into place. I think that's where we see campaign staff very differently than how it exists today. Right now, so many campaigns are backed by people who look nothing like the constituents of these leaders, and we really envision a future where both in office and staffing campaigns, there's active participation by young people, by disadvantaged youth, by people of pretty much all backgrounds.
Yeah, that's great. And you talked about focusing on economic justice this year. Can you talk a little bit, what do you see that meaning? What is economic justice? What would you like to see happen differently in our country around the economy?
Absolutely. Well, I think for our group together, that involves a number of issues having to do with income inequality. We're interested in how education can level the playing field. I think that's where some amount of the rallying that has happened around Bernie Sanders has been, because of just how much there's a lack of economic opportunity in this country right now for so many people, that I think that there's sort of this particular moment is important for economic justice.
Right. We definitely want to expand the economic opportunities for people. It feels like the American dream is slipping away from us here. And instead of going forward and next generation being better off, it's maybe the first generation in the history of the country that's going to be worse off. So we definitely want to stop that slide and expand opportunity. And how aware are people on your campus about the economic inequality thing? Is it something people talk about, or is it a handful of a few political activists? Just how broad-based is the interest and concern about economic justice?
I think it's definitely something that's on most people's minds. I think people see certainly different solutions for how they would like to solve it. There are more progressive students here, and there are certainly people who are more conservatively minded, but particularly starting with the Occupy movements and now with Bernie Sanders, it's, you know, a constant discussion about it, which is really important.
Yeah, that's great. And I remember when I was at Yale years ago, there was the Party of the Right, but at the time, you know, it was a very right-wing conservative party. It was really a joke. It was just a few kind of oddballs, really, who were in the right wing. But I, how does it shake down now? What's happening on the campus now? Is that we've got the SNAP pack here, which is progressive, but how does it shape up in terms of the current student population? Like, how many are progressives? How many are right wing? How many are kind of apolitical?
So I'd say the apolitical group is probably the smallest. But that isn't to say that the right-wing group is particularly large. I think it's certainly there's a good sentiment on this campus that either being liberal or progressive is likely the dominant strains of thought that are going on. I certainly think that among the more progressive-minded students, there's a range, but been pretty pleased with how progressive many parts of Yale are.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad to see people active, really. That's the main thing. Get in the conversation, get in the debate, get in the game and make a difference. So I'm so happy to see what you're doing there. And what about some other campuses? I know you mentioned the SNAP pack is the largest student pack in the country. Are there many other student packs, or what do you see happening kind of with progressive politics and campuses across the country?
I wish that there were more student-run PACs. I don't think that there are that many. I think that it's been an incredible model that we'd love to see elsewhere for how students can really have an impact on political campaigns. I think that there's a lot of discussions that go on, but figuring out how to sort of have an activist presence can often be hard at a college institution level. I don't know exactly all the different situations that are going on at different colleges, but it certainly seems like there's an interest and a want that young people across the country have to be involved in campaigns in what seems to me a growing way. So whether that means they want to work on one, whether that means they want to run, whether it just means they want to study politics, it feels like there's definitely an enthusiasm and an energy, which is exciting.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, and my limited observation, it seems like the two driving forces that are animating a lot of young people to get involved in politics now is, you know, first, as you mentioned, the issues of economic justice, and then secondly, the climate change problem, which is really making life difficult and over time, you know, really extraordinary and not good changes coming. I was just reading in the paper today about they're saying now the sea rise that they're expecting for communities living along the coastline, it's actually going to be double the sea rise than they thought because they didn't factor in that the Antarctica was going to be melting. And with that then melting in big way, that's going to increase the sea levels bigger and faster than they ever expected. So do you think those are kind of the two main issues students you know care about, or what do you see as the motivating factors for young people to get involved?
Absolutely. I see both of those as huge motivators. I probably see two other. I think about the climate change, that there's something about, you know, you don't really have a choice about being political because at the end of the day, climate change will affect everyone. And so there isn't an opportunity to be apolitical because there are really real effects that are already starting to take place. I think the two other issues that I might add to it is I'm excited about how much sort of activism I've seen at Yale about reproductive rights and access to reproductive health care. And then in addition, there's been an enormous amount of activism surrounding issues like police brutality, just as that's been reflected also across the country.
Right. So it's kind of the confluence of the four of those issues that, you know, someone's going to care about one, if not all four of those issues, and you know you need to take political action to address it.
Absolutely.
And how did you personally get involved? I know you've been volunteering on local and federal political campaigns for a number of years. What kind of motivated you to get involved?
Well, I, from a young age, had a pretty acute passion for feminism and was very interested in learning everything I could about it. And so those sorts of issues that are reflected there have always been on my list of priorities. And then as I've sort of read more and seen more, been increasingly aware and dedicated to economic issues. And from, as I said, but I think my family has always sort of been politically involved, and that definitely helped make it easier for me to learn how to engage with campaigns.
And is your family liberal, or are they conservatives and you're kind of rebelling against?
They're definitely progressive.
Fantastic. Well, you know, it can cut either way. I was always afraid when I became a mother that when my child would become a rabid right-winger just in to rebel against me being a progressive. But that didn't happen, so I'm grateful for that. But I'm so glad that you're in there. And then what about the presidential race? You know, I assume that's a very hot topic, and young people across the country are supporting Bernie Sanders in droves. I mean, like over 80% in many cases of the young voters going for Senator Sanders. Are you active in the race? And what's the discussion like on campus about the presidential race and Bernie Sanders?
There's definitely a lot of passion for Bernie Sanders here. I think that we may have a particularly high number of Hillary supporters also that are very vocal at this campus. And it's been really amazing to sort of like watch the conversations that have emerged about the two and what drives people to sort of lean one way or another. It's often much more complicated than I would have imagined originally. SNAP itself doesn't endorse a presidential candidate because we don't place anyone on those campaigns. But between our staff, we're actually quite divided too. So that's been interesting to watch as people are certainly passionate about the candidates that they're supporting.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I can see, given your slate of issues, why people would back Bernie Sanders, because he's been very strong about economic justice as central in his campaign. Also, the climate change, he's been out front. Maybe it's around reproductive rights and the police brutality. People think Hillary would be stronger in that, or maybe her experience as Secretary of State and Senator. And what are the arguments that you see on both sides of that debate among the people you know on campus?
So as far as support for Hillary goes, I've seen a fair amount of just people trying to think realistically about who's going to be able to be a Republican candidate, and that's certainly, that discussion has decreased as momentum behind Bernie has built and it's been seen that he can actually win a number of states. And I certainly also think that there's been a lot of discussions about race and women's issues that have emerged surrounding Bernie and critiques of what have happened in the past. I think that there's an interesting dialogue going on right now about an issue of authenticity and whether that's expected from our political representatives or whether there are sort of performances of authenticity that people are more focused on. But regardless of the different ones, they've all sort of been really amazing. And I think that one of the sort of best parts about Bernie running is just that he has opened up this conversation in a way that I can't imagine would have been opened up had he not. And I think he's really made it so that there's a forum to discuss these issues.
Yeah, he really has front and center. And I think when Senator Sanders began, he was planning to have that be the purpose of the candidacy, is to kind of push Hillary to the left and open up the conversation about the influence of money in Wall Street on Washington, D.C. right now and on our whole government. But he's just caught fire, and it's, you know, people, it's really young people have been the oxygen in his campaign that really bolstered him, plus, you know, money pouring in. Who knew that he would be competitive and in some time periods raising more money than Hillary. But Absolutely. He's doing it in checks with $27 as opposed to $27,000 for showing up at a dinner. But he's really giving Hillary a run for her money.
And I think that's what's so exciting is that, you know, for all of these people who have always talked about the importance of grassroots politics, we're actually seeing that, you know, it really can make a difference and it really has a chance against sort of like a more establishment candidate. I think that Bernie really represents not only a change in the way that Obama did in 2008, but he provides a political dialogue that's much more accessible to people who are college age and want to become involved in political discussions for the first time.
Yes, very good. And are you have you taken a stand on the Bernie versus Hillary, or are you remaining neutral as the head of the SNAP PAC?
As the head of SNAP, I'm neutral in my own personal planning on voting. I intend to vote for Bernie in the primary, and I think it will likely be that I'll be voting for Hillary in the general election, just given how I still think that things might shake out.
Yeah, and she's definitely looking like she's going to be making it. And, you know, that's what people are asking me, like, well, who are you going to vote for? I said, well, you know, vote for Bernie in the primary and Hillary in the general. You know, knowing that Bernie could be, I think, a very positive influence on Hillary, encouraging her to break from some of the ties with Wall Street and big finance, and have her, you know, push her to do more economic programs that really help the middle class and alleviate poverty. So, and I think he's been very successful already in making those kinds of shifts. And then sometimes I see Hillary, like yesterday when Donald Trump was in the town hall meeting with Chris Matthews, and Donald Trump comes out and says, well, yes, we need to, you know, criminalize abortion. We're going to ban it under my administration when I'm president. We're going to ban abortions, and we're going to criminalize the doctors and the women and punish them for anyone who exercises their reproductive rights, basically. So, you know, he came out with that, and it's just like, it's stunning to think about how far back and how fast we could lose the ground that's been fought for decades on reproductive rights, and then we have Rachel Maddow immediately interviewing Hillary Clinton saying, what's your response to Donald Trump saying he's going to punish women for having abortions? And she was so eloquent about the importance of reproductive rights and the importance of not rolling back the clock, and that we have to take Donald Trump seriously and not brush this off as he's, you know, silly or crazy or there's no chance of winning, that we really need to stand up to the kinds of messages he's making about women, about immigrants, about Muslims, about Mexicans, and we really need to rise up against that. And it just made me proud. I could see her in that moment as someone you would respect as a leader.
Absolutely. And you bring up a number of important issues that I think Hillary has been really amazing at handling. I think that the way that she's shifted her dialogue around Donald Trump has been huge, because whether, you know, it's a fair complaint or not, the people who are supporting Donald Trump are voicing something that is deep and important to be heard, and voicing their own lack of economic opportunity. And I think as much as she can realize that that isn't something to mock or make fun of, that's huge. I also think that, you know, there are particularly women's issues that Hillary has just been put under such a microscope in a way that Bernie or a male candidate never would. Even just whether, you know, she's been fighting for women's issues over the years, which of course she has been. And I know one of the questions that I've sort of been asked a number of times is this concern about whether if Bernie loses, whether the college kids are going to actually go and vote for Hillary, or if they're going to support someone like Jill Stein. And I, you know, when I get this question, I sort of think to myself, I cannot imagine that in big numbers people aren't going to vote for Hillary. I think that there's sort of this idea on campus that, yes, it's exciting to back Bernie, and, you know, wouldn't it be cool if he did get the nomination, but if he doesn't, that doesn't mean that we're going to abandon the progress that we've made over the years.
Right, exactly. Well, it's encouraging you hear you say that. I was watching Susan Sarandon on MSNBC the other night, and, you know, she was asked the question, Will you, she's obviously out there publicly, has endorsed Senator Sanders for president, and Chris Hayes asked her, well, if it's Hillary as the nominee for the Democratic Party in November, will you vote for her? And Susan Sarandon said, well, we'll see. It depends on what happens, which created a bit of a stir. And I think there is that issue. It's like, well, how could you not vote for Hillary if the alternative is a Republican? Because whether it's Trump or Ted Cruz or Paul Ryan or whichever one of them gets in there, their program is definitely, anti-feminist. I think it's going to be an issue, and I think Hillary needs to really reach out to the Bernie Sanders supporters and not take their support for granted, as there has been kind of an attitude by some establishment Democrats of, well, where else does the left have to go? So, the reality is they can go home and they cannot vote. I can't see any Bernie Sanders supporters voting for any of the Republican candidates in the final, but I can see people staying home because they're not excited. So, I'm hoping she'll do something bold, like have Elizabeth Warren as her vice presidential candidate or someone from that wing. Maybe it'll be Sherrod Brown, but someone who can animate the progressive community within progressive base within the Democratic Party to get us excited about that campaign. What do you think about that?
I definitely think that would be huge, and I think it is so important that she doesn't take any of the support for granted. I think that's been what her steep learning curve has been so far, is realizing that there is this momentum that is ready to back Bernie. I read recently a little bit just about the level of sort of like privilege that goes into college students who will vote for Bernie or for not for Hillary, even in the general election, and just that's an ability where the issues that Hillary is still fighting for don't actually affect you in your day-to-day life. And I think that's important that conversation is coming out, because I think that will encourage people to rally around Hillary should she get the nomination. And I do think I have, maybe it's a little bit too optimistic, but some degree of faith that people will build excitement around her if Bernie is out of the race. And I think that people do really recognize how much of an impact he's already had in bringing her to the left and highlighting these issues, and that no matter what, will have a permanent stay.
Right. And you can arguably say that Hillary Clinton is the most experienced person and the most prepared to be president of anybody in the history of the country.
Absolutely.
She served as first lady. She served as U.S. Senator, elected two terms in New York State, and served as Secretary of State. So she certainly has a lot of experience, knows the issues, knows the country. And by the way, I have a friend who was in Yale Law School at the same time as Bill and Hillary Clinton, and she said at the time nobody knew who Bill Clinton was, but everybody knew Hillary Rodham because she was so brilliant. So she is, truly brilliant and has a real grasp on the issues. So I think if she is elected, and hopefully be her and not a Republican, I think she'll be a sensible president. I think she'll be a better president because of Bernie.
Certainly. And I think, I sort of imagine her as being one of the greatest presidents that we will have had, both because she's been so experienced and because, as you mentioned, she's just so brilliant. And I think a lot of sort of the issues that I've had with her, I've also had to realize that I'm putting her under a microscope and I'm putting her on sort of like a very, very small tightrope that she's got to be walking on, is playing into all of these different ideas that people have about what it means to be a woman and what it means to be, she has to play a grandmother card, she has to play a not too bossy card, et cetera, even though she is this incredibly brilliant woman who has so much experience. And I do very much feel like she would do a terrific job in office.
That's great. And it's interesting, even knowing all of that, you're still have a passion for Bernie Sanders. So what is it about Sanders that's attracting you?
I think that's where the economic issues come in. I think that if I really, really thought that he was going to take home the nomination, I would perhaps think twice about voting for him in a more deep way. But I think that as far as the way I see it is very much just bringing Hillary to the left, and he's been so important for that. And I really do think that as far as tapping into a network of disenfranchised white working class folks, he's done a far better job than she has. And so I'm interested in sort of looking at how the Democratic Party in general can tap into that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, I'm so encouraged that you're so actively involved, and so many students at Yale and at campuses around the country are very involved in this. And what would your advice be to Hillary to reach out and engage those people? Say she does get the nomination, which is likely at the convention in July. What would your advice be to Hillary Clinton on how to attract the young vote that has been with Bernie?
I certainly think that she needs to think hard about who she asks to be her vice presidential nominee. I agree that that's a place where she can rally up an enormous amount of support, or if it's someone who people aren't excited about, the reverse can be true. I think that as much as possible, you know, and it's almost an impossible ask, but she needs to pay attention to what's going on with college students. She needs to be looking at them and listening to them and realizing, like, sort of what are the different influences that are going into this huge push for Bernie. And I think as much as she can, talking about economic issues will be huge on that front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And are you involved in any other activities on campus?
So the primary other activity that I spend my time doing is I do some amount of activism and also volunteering for Planned Parenthood.
Holy cow. Good for you. And what's happening with women on the campus these days?
A number of things. There's definitely, as I'm sure you're aware, a large conversation about sexual assault on college campus. There's mm-hmm. also a perhaps smaller but still vitally important conversation about access to reproductive health care and how, you know, we as college students can make it more accessible both on our campus and in the community. There's, uh-huh. And then there's just, you know, general conversation about what it means to be a woman in an academic institution.
Uh-huh. Good. And I understand there's a group called the Women's Leadership Initiative at the Yale campus that was started in 2006 by five undergraduate women to create an organization to encourage mentorship and support for women leaders on campus. Do you know anything about that? Does that do anything worthwhile?
I know of several people who are involved in it and know of it peripherally. I've never been particularly involved in it, but it certainly has been an important resource for a number of people I know. I think that depending on where your interests lie, that can be a more or less beneficial organization to be a part of.
Yeah. And what are some of the other, I know, for example, there was a summit last week on all the women's organizations at Yale. And did you happen to participate in that?
I did not.
Yeah, I was, I'm on the Council of the Yale Women, and they were talking about the advantages of bringing the women's groups together just for collaboration and also for interfacing with some of the women alumni. So I think it's good to kind of reach out as you have. I was very impressed that you reached out to the Yale Women Council just to let us all know about SNAPPAC and that the students are organizing for progressive politics on the campus. So you're very much on the ball. So have you thought about running for office yourself?
I used to think about it a lot. I think I haven't ruled it out, but I think that I would be more interested in other parts of the process. I sort of worry about the sort of what I would give up to be running. And also I know that some of my more progressive beliefs aren't the most electable always.
Well, I think that might be changing. I mean, I used to think some of that too, but there seems to be a real openness this year, unlike any I've ever seen in my lifetime, about really an openness to new ways of thinking about what should be done and a more receptivity for progressive politics. Something like 50% of the Democrats in Iowa call themselves socialists now, and that's not a term I would describe for myself, but it definitely indicates a, you know, strong left-leaning economic views. I think the collapse of capitalism in 2007-2008 really gave capitalism a bad name, and also the income inequality. And we have 90% of the benefits accruing to the top 10%. That's not a healthy situation. So I think all of that has maybe made more fertile ground for successful progressive candidates. So don't give up yet.
I certainly think that is a promising wave of just like what's going on right now, and that is definitely exciting. I think had you asked me a year ago, I would have said, you know, I used to think about it, but absolutely not. And now there is sort of a sense that, well, if it's not me, it's still going to be candidates who are actually going to be really exciting and left-leaning, and that's huge, I think.
Right, and a lot of women have had satisfactory careers and activism by being on campaigns, be campaign manager or staffing them. So, you know, there's all different kinds of roles to play in campaigns besides the candidate. In fact, it's advisable to probably play some of those roles before being the candidate so you really know what you're getting yourself into.
Absolutely.
So you should have a good grasp on the national races and where you might want to run. Are you in touch? Is Emily's List active on the campuses at all, or the Feminist Majority with Eleanor Smeal, or any of those making headway on campus?
So particularly Emily's List is definitely something that gets talked about. I haven't seen much activism or particular groups associated with it. I think the areas that I see the most sort of women's coalitions forming are through either the Women's Center, or there is a group that focuses on reproductive rights, and then people's more sort of general concerns in groups like the Dems and in volunteer organizations.
Yeah, good. And you, I think you're in connection there with Patty Russo, who runs the Women's Campaign School at Yale, which is a great training ground and great source of connections. So maybe you can attend, I think it's in June, after classes are out. Maybe you can, you'd probably be the youngest person who's ever gone there, but she does a great training school for women interested in running for office or even being on campaigns.
Mm-hmm. No, that's definitely something on my radar, and she's obviously an incredible resource and has so much incredible advice to give. And I really have just heard amazing things about the program, even if it's not going to lead to you running, but, you know, any sort of position in leadership and how that works.
Yeah. And what are your plans for the summer? Is this going to be the year when you become a fellow and work on a campaign, or what do you have lined up?
So I'm not completely sure yet for the summer. I'm still working out several things. I know that I'll be doing my senior thesis over the next year, during my senior year, and so I'm figuring out how much thesis research I will need to do over the summer, and then looking at a few other things.
What's your senior thesis going to be?
I think it's going to be on the sort of change that happened in the humor present in pornography in the 1980s, likely in connection with the invention of the VHS.
That's in it. Well, you know, VHS and also cell phones.
Yes.
You know, I was talking to, I think it's Gail Diner, professor at Wheelock College up in Massachusetts, who's made a big study on the pornography industry. And she says some of the porn money, business-wise, is behind the cell phone expansion, because they figure if they can get cell phones into everybody's hands, then they can massively increase their distribution of pornography.
Absolutely.
So you might want to get in touch with her up there at Wheelock. She's done some great research in that whole area.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your majoring now in American studies? Are you finding it interesting? Do you think it's irrelevant and a waste of time? Or What are you finding in your studies that's helping to prepare you for kind of coming out and helping to build a new American politics?
Well, I'm biased, but I think it's an absolutely incredible major. I have loved the interdisciplinary parts of it. I have loved the professors that I've been able to get to know through it. The classes that I've been able to take are just incredible. I think that there's so many different seminars on so many different things. I think that you can, you know, you can go into American studies and have completely different experiences. To me, it represents a really, really wide range of possibilities and a lot of encouragement about pursuing sort of a something that you particularly find fascinating or interesting or worth pursuing. So that's all been very, very exciting to me, and I think encouraging too.
Yeah, that's great. And you're interested in pursuing feminist media studies down the road. What are you thinking there about communicating the messages, the content, and the images that can support women's equality, or what are you thinking?
Certainly, and I think I'm interested in figuring out a way to pursue feminist media studies along with labor studies. So I think I'm likely to apply for my PhD over the next year and see where that takes me.
Okay, good. Yeah, I think the more degrees a woman has, the more credible she can be when she's speaking. So that's a good thing. I was just speaking this morning with a classmate of mine from Yale who went on to be a Rhodes Scholar, and she got her Yale Law degree and her doctorate out there in England. So she just has, it's given her a lot of standing. When she speaks, people listen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing to do. So what's happening now with the, you talked about being involved with Planned Parenthood on the campus. I mean, people must be just outraged about what Donald Trump is doing and the Republicans generally.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a place where people see the election as, you know, on the one hand representing enormous possibility for positive change, but on the other hand is just so scary because of what could happen, particularly with Supreme Court justices and even just, you know, the upcoming case decisions. I think that I would venture a guess that over the past year there has been an enormous increase in just the number of students who are involved in one way or another with groups that are working to increase access to care, working to get out the message that, you know, things, regardless of what happens, we're going to figure out a way that makes reproductive health care a possibility for an increasing number of Americans.
Yeah, as opposed to a decreasing number
with
the assault at the state level. And what do you think of Donald Trump?
I think he's complicated. I think that I wish that the Democratic Party on a whole had not belittled and mocked him for so long. I wish that he'd been taken seriously and sort of we'd looked at what his supporters were saying behind him and what was going on. I think that he gives voice to an incredible number of bigoted views that are very, very scary and adds fire to them in a way that's worrisome. And I worry what the lasting impact of his campaign will be, regardless of whether he's elected.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's kind of a both and that in some ways Donald Trump is kind of a natural expression of the Republican politics of the past 30 years, which, you know, have had these kind of dog whistles. So bigots, as they went along, you know, people were not so overtly racist, but they were definitely appealing to, you know, racist issues. And but Donald Trump is just coming out. He's kind of unabashedly racist and aligning himself with the Ku Klux Klan and white supremacists. He was like, well, what's wrong with that? So I think he is, and in some ways maybe it's a good thing to have someone like him as a candidate so we can just all rise up and go, no, that's really not who we are as Americans, and we totally reject and repudiate the bigoted white supremacist, anti-feminist, anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant views that Donald Trump is representing.
No, I think you're totally right that he very much sort of exposes the racism and the misogyny that's been ingrained in so much of Republican politics but has sort of been able to be concealed amongst this, you know, very fiscally oriented way in which doesn't recognize the very social consequences of economic policy. I also think that he is an absolute embodiment of what the U.S. would like to see as a masculine ideal, and that in itself is worrisome, that there's a quest to find the most masculine candidate. And I think even before the more explicit comments that were made, he was very much playing into concepts of masculinity in that sense.
Yeah, well, he's totally playing the alpha male.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very concerning to me, in that when people feel nervous and scared, whether it's of the terrorists or the economic situation, they tend to gravitate towards a strong man. And he's certainly coming out as the strong man, that he's saying everybody can rely on him. But it's very scary to see in the United States.
Definitely. And I think he represents to a number of people, you know, particularly as being such a wealthy man, he represents something that so many people don't have, in a way that it's almost as if voting for him is voting for economic opportunity, even though it so clearly isn't.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. And I was reading something the other day, you know, he inherited vast wealth. I don't know, it was like $400 million from his father and something like that. And that if he had just put that money into the stock market and done nothing, he would have been as wealthy as he is now. That it's not that he's particularly gifted or genius in business. It's that, you know, money accrues to money, and that's how the system is designed, in favor of wealth flowing to wealth.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some people kind of get sucked into that imagery. Vote for him is a vote for economic success. And then,
yeah,
as you say, that's not really going to be true for most people.
No, and it's sort of awful in the magnitude that it won't be true.
Right. No, exactly. You look at the Trump tax plan, it's very regressive and very much in the mold of the past 30 years of Republicans, of tax breaks for the rich and, you know, crumbs for everybody else.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I hope that Bernie speaks to and is able to harness, is tapping into the sense of there is an economic opportunity, but how can we actually change that? Because I think so much over the last 30 years, the Democratic Party has emerged not as an alternative to the Republican pro-business model, but as another pro-business model, just a more neoliberally focused one.
Yeah, exactly. And what's happening about voter registration and get out the vote efforts? Are, you know, given the level of interest and activism among youth on your campus and other campuses around the country, are there active voter registration drives? Is that something that you get involved with? Is someone doing that on campus? Or is anything happening there with voter registration and get out the vote efforts?
There's definitely a large get out the vote and voter registration efforts. And I think one of the most exciting things about being at Yale is that there is not just for presidential years and for federal races, but for local races, for our alderman races, that people really have a sense that, you know, what it means to be a citizen in the United States is exercising your right to vote and how important that is. And so that means not only do you need to go vote, but you also need to register people. And the drives have been incredible. I think it's also a great time that different groups have shown that we're all pretty interested in getting as many people involved as possible. And so there's, you know, coalitions between different politically minded groups who have just gotten together to be able to say it's important for everyone to register to vote.
So who's active on that on the Yale campus now about voter registration?
So primarily, I would say that the Yale College Democrats and the Yale College Republicans both do an enormous amount. And then I think through that or through other groups, a number of people get involved. And it's definitely, in a cool way, I would say, seen as something that even if you aren't involved in those groups in another way, you can certainly join in as far as it comes to voter registration.
That sounds great. And does the Party of the Right still exist, or is that dissipated by now?
The Party of the Right does still exist. There's the Party of the Right, there's a Conservative Party, and then there's the Conservative college students, three different groups. But they all exist in one form or another, but their voices are certainly fewer than the other end.
Mm-hmm. And if you had to put it at a percentage-wise, you know, based on your experience, what do you think the percentage of liberal versus conservative is on campus?
I worry that my sample size may be very reflective of the people that I choose to hang out with and their political views. So to me, it seems like it's so rare to find someone who is conservative and openly conservative. I'm guessing it's higher than you know, how I sort of see it, which is like got to be less than 10% in my idea. But mm-hmm. certainly there isn't an enormous push. And I think that the issues that are sort of seen as being okay to be conservative are limited.
Right. And one way or the other, we're going to have a new president elected this November. And when we have a new president, I'm wondering if you were advising the next president of the United States, what are the top three things you would want the next president to do?
Well, I guess I hope that the next new president is able to work with our Congress. I very much worry that no matter who it is, hopefully either Hillary or Bernie, that both of them are going to struggle with that. I think as much as possible, working to find a way to actually pass legislation will be huge. And then I think as many different angles that we can tackle income inequality and economic issues, I also think ensuring that Planned Parenthoods are not just defunded, but are funded and rallied against, around. And then I think there's an enormous amount of work to do when it comes to immigration reform. I think particularly because of what Donald Trump has sparked, that there's a long road ahead.
Mm-hmm. Right. Those are three great issues to be working on. And in terms of which endorsements you're doing this year, have you looked into the Donna Edwards U.S. Senate race and get a chance to get an African-American woman into the U.S. Senate here in Maryland?
Yes, and that would be huge. So we have definitely been in contact with her campaign. We, as much as possible, try and hope that our campaigns will work out for the summer. So when there's a primary in April, sometimes we get a little nervous about making sure that we will actually have a campaign to send our fellows to work on over the summer. But
right.
We are very interested in her campaign, and particularly because we know that every endorsement can make a difference in the primary in particular.
Right, exactly. And that is a little scary. I think that primary is in April. So, and the polls we're seeing now just are so close.
Exactly.
She's so close that could be doing it, but you know, again, it's often a lot of the money is flowing to the male establishment candidate, but you can counter that with some money and some very active grassroots, and she's such a great candidate. So we'll see what happens with that one. And is there any other race that you're looking at, the House or the Senate, that is exciting to you right now?
I think there are a number of exciting ones, I would say. I would say Tammy Duckworth in particular is really exciting. Michael Bennett in Colorado, looking at Cherry Bustos, Catherine Cortez Masto, Kyrsten Sinema, all of them are so exciting to us. I think the number of women that we're looking to hopefully endorse is really encouraging and promising to me. I'm excited by the fact that our two endorsements thus far have been women who are absolutely so dedicated to all of the issues that we care about, and I think that there's going to be a whole host of candidates that we're going to endorse that are similarly aligned, and that's very exciting.
That's great. And are you getting any of the faculty involved at all, or is this, you know, wholly students run, or you know, how much support is there, if any, from the administration or faculty?
So we're interested in increasing our basically all the support that we can get in any direction, particularly as far as faculty go in just advising us, because people have had such incredible experiences and know so much in a way that, you know, being from 19 to 22 years old, we can only know so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things that SNAP has certainly struggled with in the past has been how to tap into the resources that are really the closest resources we have, but we're definitely working on it.
That's great. And what has been the most fun you've ever had in all your political activism?
I've got to say some of the get out the vote weekends, I think working in Virginia in 2012 for Obama, doing some campaigning there was really exciting. And then I also worked extensively for a mayoral campaign that wasn't successful in New Haven, but it was such a small group, and it was really exciting because it felt like there was an enormous amount of enthusiasm and excitement about changing the way that things were run here. And so even just that get out the vote weekend and that Tuesday was incredibly exciting.
Yeah, that's so much fun. I remember I worked on Get Out the Vote for Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts when she first ran for the Senate, and it was just such an exciting campaign. And, you know, Get Out the Vote, you have the direct contact with the voters and conveying the message and engaging people. So, you know, we can make a difference if we get involved, and it's so great that you see that. And the fact that so many people don't get involved means the people who do get involved can have that much more impact.
Absolutely. No, there's something so exciting about, you know, knocking on someone's door to ask them if they've gone and voted. And, of course, sometimes it isn't the most encouraging experience, but sometimes when you get someone who is just really excited about it and you get to talk to them, it's completely rewarding.
Absolutely. So for our listeners who want to learn more about your work or maybe want to contribute to the Students for New American Politics, how can they be in touch with you and your organization?
So by web, we have a website, which is www.snappac.org, and then I can be emailed at mila.rostain, R-O-S-T-A-I-N, at snappac.org, and that information is also on our website.
Okay, so that's for all our listeners out there who want to support the next generation of progressives. Go to SnapPack, that's SnapPack.org, and check it out. So we're just wrapping up here, but Mila, do you have any final comment you want to give to our listeners?
I would just convey once again that it's a particularly exciting time to be involved in politics and couldn't be more forward-looking to the election in November.
Great. Well, I'm very encouraged by you and by what you're doing with SnapPack, and I'm happy to support you in any way that I can and wish you all the best.
Thank you, and thank you for having us on the show.
Oh, thank you. It's Mila Rostain. Thank you so much for being with us today.